Media recognition from Bloomberg, Reuters, Recycling Trade Publications. Patented process for 100% recovery of critical metals, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, aluminum. American Manganese is focused on recycling lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles. American Manganese trades on the TSX Venture, AMY, the U.S., AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit AmericanManganeseInc.com or phone me, Larry Ray, at 778-574-4444.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council Incorporated. Her websites, JugglingDynamite.com and VenablePark.com. Welcome back to the show, Danielle.
Hey, Jim.
Danielle, are there such a thing as defensive equities in a bear market?
Well, it's in the beginning stages, there's a bifurcation. There's a certain amount of things that are considered more defensive, dividend paying. The Dow, for example, the Dow Jones, more established, older companies, more value-based. They pay dividends to their shareholders rather than pure growth companies, which many of which have negative earnings, don't make money at all, so they don't pay dividends out, or they reinvest their funds and don't pay dividends out. So that class is considered the growth stocks or the higher risk stuff, and as a result, it typically succumbs to a bear market first. It's kind of a cascading effect, and people will start to leave the things they think are really highly valued and growth orientated in that environment and start shifting to things they think are more defensive, like financials and pipelines and utilities and, you know, consumer staples and this sort of thing. However, the issue is that basically they're all equities of different stripes, and when you proceed into a bear market, as it takes on momentum, as it continues for, you know, longer than a few weeks, which typically it can last a year or two, when you get sort of into it, you start to see selling across the board. And that's where you aren't going to get much protection in many of these so-called safe haven areas of the stock market. So I always like to point out that, you know, they aren't as defensive as people seem to perceive, and that the reason most funds and managers don't get out of equities altogether, or if they think there's a recession coming and they're concerned about capital loss, that they move to these relative return places, relatively safer places, but they won't actually reduce their equity exposure outright typically. In fact, a holding of 5% cash is considered about as defensive as they actually get, even though cash is one of the few things that holds value in this environment and actually gives you great optionality to buy after things have gone down. You know, this is my pet peeve or my beef that I've talked about for a long time for everyone, you know, that talks about, you know, what's the buy. There are times in the market cycle when the best thing to do is not buy anything, in fact, is to raise cash. But you rarely hear anyone talk about that because everyone's so, you know, focused on staying fully invested, even though that's against their best interests at this point in a cycle. When things have gone on a very long time, when things are extremely valued, when euphoria is wide, when cash levels are low, you know, it's interesting, but sentiment surveys of investors in the past several months, they have expressed pessimism on the economy at a record level. There's a huge preponderance of people, both in the retail and the professional community, who are concerned about the prospects of recession incoming. And yet, if you look at the asset allocations, they still have been extremely concentrated in equities, very little cash, and almost no bonds. Bonds have been investment grade or government bonds have been the most oversold they have been in 40 years. And it's interesting to me now, as we're getting into the later stages, the middle stages, I would say, of this bear market, where we've already seen a lot of carnage, a lot of major drops and things, that we're finally starting to see a discernment between credit types. And this is, again, something that I like to talk about because people tend to paint bonds all with the same brush, you know, that they're as if they're one one asset altogether. But in fact, within that category, you have, you know, issued bonds issued by provinces and municipalities, by cities, and then by corporations. And there's all kinds of different grades of corporations, of course, right, from zombie corporations who issue bonds to keep paying their bills. They literally have no revenue or very little revenue, revenue that's insufficient to cover their overhead. Never mind, nothing to do with earning profits. They burn money, right? They have a negative burn rate. And they, the only way they can keep going is by issuing new bonds to investors who are willing to swap their cash for that paper in the promise that it'll be repaid at some point. Well, obviously, it's a low probability bet when it's a very highly levered, high-risk company, because as we get into the recessionary phase, the revenues begin to plunge all over, and as at the same time that investor appetite retract. So those who were happy to buy garbage paper for a very low yield, you know, 6 months ago, are not able to do so now, both because the assets they own have already plunged and they're running around their hair on fire, and or they're just terrified now and they don't have any liquidity and cash to use. So all those things suggest that there's a high correlation between assets, and that's why I've mentioned before that in highly levered markets like we've seen, you know, both between asset, like equities, cryptocurrencies, the housing market, there's been so much speculation going on in housing, you know, corporate lending, all these things have been so intermingled in terms of people borrowing against one to buy the other and vice versa, that we have a market that is now like hyped up on smack. Like, it basically moves at record speed. And this is why it has been such a dangerous environment for so long, is that because you could see that leverage being put on leverage being put on leverage, it's like you pull out one brick and the whole thing starts to fall. And that's why you see these lightning fast moves to the downside and a spillover or contagion between asset classes, which people thought were somehow different. In fact, they're all very similar in this environment.
I'm thinking about non-fungible tokens, a non-existent item that exists only in the digital world. People paid millions, and they're finding out people don't want to buy them for millions. Maybe they'll offer you a few hundred for virtual real estate that I've heard has gone for hundreds of thousands of dollars, an imaginary island.
Exactly. So that was very much an earmark of the insanity which has prevailed for the last couple of years on free money and easy credit, record low interest rates, and a whole new class of people who either have never lived through bear markets in the past and so don't actually know how this works, or have conveniently forgot, have some kind of form of amnesia where they forget what it's like when liquidity dries up. But we're in the liquidity drying up phase now, right? And in that phase, everyone is in a dash for cash because they have planned so poorly for this. So companies have done things like take their operating capital and actually put it into the stock market, or put it into crypto coins. Crazy things have gone on in the past couple of years. And I have made that point many times, that operating capital is things that cash that you may need to use to pay your overhead should something happen to your revenue or income stream. You know, so a prudent management, you set aside cash. You don't spend it all or put it in things that you would have to sell to get cash back. But in fact, that's what people have done in the past couple of years. We're seeing such crazy repercussions now, for example, where people were have agreed to buy properties, as an example, and they had that whatever money they did have as a deposit. They were borrowing heavily because more than 85% of the people buying properties in developed economies do so with mortgages. And anecdotally, I've been asking realtors in the last couple of years, and the percentage of all cash buyers seemed to be more like 5 or 6%, and the 94% were all highly levered. So even the people who had the down payments were doing things like putting them in Netflix shares, putting them in Bitcoin, you know, putting them in Tesla, and thinking that they would just park the money there until they needed it for the down payment. They'd whip it out, and, you know, they thought they were being really, you know, sophisticated in investing, so to speak, their down payment until they actually needed it. Well, of course, this is just madness, And that's what is happening now, is that, you know, some of these things, like the Bitcoins of the world, are down 58% in a matter of a few months. You know, just if you look across the board, it's really something. Tesla's down 42%, Amazon 44%, Microsoft 30%, you know, so, and some of the crypto stuff is particularly fascinating, because they too were issuing, all these companies that have cropped up in service of this, this sort of mental illness that has swept the world over these virtual things. They were also selling bonds. So they were selling bonds to its so-called investors, and using the money to build out their systems, or buy back their shares, or do whatever they were doing. Well, some of those bonds are now trading for 20 and 30 cents on the dollar. So, you know, they've just imploded as people realize there's no substance supporting any of this. And again, what do people need to spend? They need cash. They don't pay their bills in cryptocurrencies. They don't pay their taxes in cryptocurrencies. They don't, you know, buy things at the grocery store typically. Food has gone up. It's more expensive. Gasoline is over $4.42 a gallon on average in the United States right now. People are under a lot of pressure on the household and business side, because their costs spiked in the things that matter, and the assets have been tumbling in the things that they put the cash into. So they have inappropriately allocated money they needed for a rainy day into these highly levered, highly overvalued assets, and now they're all sort of tanking together. And then what you see in that environment is people start selling the good, bad, and the ugly, because they need to raise cash, and so everything really gets pummeled at the same time.
We'll have more with Danielle Park right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Danielle Park. Danielle, if the market continues to slide and companies get into trouble, should those who have been buying back their own shares instead of saving for a rainy day be rewarded for that effort by getting government bailouts? Or should they be refused because they were bad business people?
Well, you know, what they need to do is actually ban buybacks as illegal manipulation again, the way they were prior to 1980, because they are a manipulation and they should be illegal. But basically, you know, even an Apple, as an example, I've been talking about Apple because Apple was the largest concentration it has been in the S&P and the NASDAQ for the past few years. And, we kept saying that it was basically it and Microsoft were the top two holdings in the broad indices, which everyone benchmarks. And we were pointing out that they were also very overvalued. And eventually, bear markets start at the fringes and move to the middle and take out the generals at the end. And so we sort of said, you know, so long as Apple and Microsoft are propping up the broader indices, the same as in Canada, so long as the financials and the oil companies are, you know, we're very over-concentrated in those two sectors, and they tend to be late-cycle holdouts. So as long as they are holding up, you're not really getting a true picture at the carnage that's going on under the lid, so to speak, where more than, you know, more than half of the NASDAQ stocks are off 50% already. However, what's starting to happen here is that even with, and of course those tech companies were doing the lion's share of the buybacks, like huge billions of dollars they were recycling into their cash. Many of them don't pay dividends because they're so-called growth stocks, and they had a lot of excess cash flow coming in when things were hot, so to speak, and they didn't have anywhere really more useful to put money than to recycle it back into their shares. So they did that, and that helped to overvalue them to the extent that they were. And even with the announcements that they've made of late, where they've continued to do that, and this is classic late cycle as well, Apple announced when it did its earnings report last week that it was going to continue to put, you know, billions of dollars into buying back its shares. And it doesn't matter. Their shares have started dropping. They're now off 23%. And that's just a start, by the way. Microsoft is off about 30%. So this is buybacks notwithstanding. So what you classically see is that companies do the most, just like the retail public, they do the most of the buying at the high end of the valuations when the economic cycle is peaking. And they, because they mismanage their cash, they start to roll over the business model, the revenues fall at the same time, earnings come under pressure, and they stop buying back their shares just as their shares become the most attractive on a value basis because they mismanage their cash at the top. And, you know, we're only getting started here. Like the fact that Apple, you know, has come off, in the last week or so about 23% is a good start, but it's nowhere, it's not even back to where it was, you know, last fall. So, and the other things, you know, the, like things like the ARK innovation, which is this ETF that was buying all these Tesla, Bitcoin, all these companies, they were all talking about the innovation, but paying no attention to price or valuation, just buying them because of this long-term idea that these companies were innovators. Of course, that's now off 73%, that particular ETF. It's given up all of its so-called outperformance in a matter all the way back to 2019. But the thing is, these companies are still just back to where they were a couple of years ago. So this goes back to how, you know, mad this period has been, where you can get a correction of 75% and you're still just back to where we were 2 years ago. Meanwhile, a cycle test, a mean reversion, typically goes back to the test the prior lows. So, you know, right now we've got a bunch of things that are already back to where they were in 2020. Now, you know, I would suggest that most sectors are going to have to retest that March 20 low, and then we'll see, you know, where we are. But for the TSX, that could be, you could have another 40% downside. I mean, we've only seen it come off about 11%. The financials have started to roll over. They're off 16%, materials 19%, the gold miners are off 30% now, the REITs are off 15%. So these are really the fundamental underpinnings of the TSX index, which all the funds and portfolios in Canada tend to track and mimic. And so they've really only just got started here. So I think it's important for people to appreciate that we have been in such a la-la land that this kind of reversion to the mean this time could easily see declines of 70 and 80% just to take things back to where the trend, the long-term trend was before all the free money was handed out and central banks went into full, you know, QE to the moon mode, which they're now trying to walk back, of course.
Interest rates are rising, but will they rise fast enough to actually impact inflation?
Well, it's interesting because what I'm noticing in the last few days is that the Treasury yields, so these are the things that actually, so again, central banks have been talking a good game, talking about how they're going to hike rates 8 times, you know, end up with a Fed funds rate somewhere north of 3% in the next year. They've only, you know, managed to get just about 1%, and they've been talking of needing to go to a full 2% more at least in the next year. Well, in the meantime, the bond market responds and looks ahead and says, all right, so Treasury bonds sold off, as I said, the most in 40 years, which resets yields much higher. So, for example, you can buy government, you know, municipal, provincial, Canadian bonds this week for with yields of more than 3.5%. We haven't had that opportunity to get that kind of yield in quite some time. And the reason that's happened is because of this expectation of all these rate hikes. But what we've noticed in the last couple of days, as I said, there's been this bifurcation between junky debt, corporations that may or may not survive this recession, which is now increasingly looking like it started or will start in this year, in 2022. So those companies are going to struggle mightily through a recessionary environment. They're starting to cut costs. We're seeing that in the tech sector already. Even the, you know, with the stock still very high relative to where the long-term support is, even though they're still very overvalued, they've come off a lot, and you're starting to see them announce layoffs already. Well, some of those tech employees were the same ones buying the highly valued, real estate in places like Toronto and Vancouver and San Francisco and Los Angeles and all these places. So those things are all commingled, and you start to see downward pressure. So even without having to hike rates, we've already had this rate shock to the economy. We're seeing consumers pull in their spending. We're seeing a big spike in consumer credit. Canadian mortgage debt grew at $150 billion a year in the last 2 years, which was double the previous growth trend. So that just gives you a sense of how much debt Canadians have taken on and, what they're doing right now in deals either pre-approvals or promises they've had to buy properties in the last few months. They're taking floating rates, thinking that that's the answer because, they don't want to lock in because the bond yields have pushed up mortgage rates that much so quickly in such a short period of time. But anyway, back to the point, which is that the economy is already slowing. I think that's why we've already seen this drop in materials. Copper's off 17%. Silver's off 28%. We've already seen the 10-year TIPS break-even rate, wipe out all the spike that it had before the Ukraine invasion. So it could be that we've already seen peak inflation. Inflation's a lagging indicator. I've mentioned this many times. But basically, other than this ongoing constraint issue around food, which is a legitimate one, I think the housing component, which is 30% of the CPI, has already started to turn down. And we've got record amount of rental properties under construction in North America since the 1980s. So there's a lot of people who are going to be opting to rent here as they watch housing prices wobble and decline and as mortgage rates are too high for them to qualify. And all of that suggests that rates may indeed not go nearly much, that the central banks may not hike as much as is telegraphed in at the moment. But one thing for sure, the more they hike, the more that's going to hit all this floating rate debt that's been taken on. And at the same time, you've got this downturn in spending ability and consumption ability because of the rate shock and the food price shock and the fossil fuel shock and all these things. So we've really got a very fragile economy because of all the leverage and debt, because of all the borrowing against things to buy other things and all the mismanagement of cash that's gone on. So I think that this is a really epic time. And I think a lot of people are going to get hurt here, but hopefully a lot of people are also going to take advantage of this. And the ones who have kept their cash, who have managed their retirement savings appropriately, who have managed their operating capital and kept it liquid, they are going to be the strong hands that come out of this whole mosh pit of mess and, find things of value again at the other side of it.
Danielle, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Hey, thank you.
My guest has been Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council Incorporated. If you have any questions for Danielle or any of our other guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network, find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.